Good morning, Molweni, goeiemôre, Dumela. Before we start, can we observe a moment of silence for a prayer? Thank you. Thank you very much. I think this is our first meeting of the Fifth Democratic Parliament as the Select Committee on Justice and Security. More on justice, because yesterday we had a meeting with Correctional Services. I would like to welcome you all, hoping that we'll work together, advise each other as we are elected by the people and we know we're all most of us were together when the president was addressing the both parliament, joint parliament. I think the only thing that this committee can take this South Africa forward is the way that we behave, the way that we work as a team. Considering or remembering where we are coming from, because the common goal is to take South Africa forward. No matter when the opposition or whatever coming from different backgrounds, but I know that our goal is to take South Africa forward. With these viewers, I don't want to bear you, I would like to welcome you. Thank you, Minister, for joining us. I know you are busy people, busy, up and down, but you make time for us. Thank you very much for that. With these viewers, honorable members, I welcome you to this Select Committee for Security and Justice. If we continue with our program, we'll ask for from the Secretary of the Apologies.
Chief Honorable Sobariani is on official leave, and Honorable Manopole is attending another meeting to be a little late.
Thank you very much. We, without wasting time, let's introduce ourselves. I'll start from you, Honorable Deputy Minister, if you can introduce your team or introduce themselves, and therefore the honorable members will introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, you Chairperson. Just also to give the apologies of the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. He is participating in or leading the budget debate in the National Assembly on Correctional Services. So he would have liked to have been here, but he unfortunately has to be there. But then I'm John Jeffrey, the Deputy Minister for Justice and Constitutional Development. I think, as you know, it's one ministry. So it's Minister Masuta, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. And then there are two deputies, Deputy Minister Makweta, who's the Deputy Minister specifically for Correctional Services, and I'm the Deputy Minister specifically for Justice and Constitutional Development. I think the rest of everybody should then, if, through your chair, introduce themselves, starting with the Director General next to me.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. My name is Nkululeko Sindane. I'm the Director General for the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and good morning, Honorable Minister.
My Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Devo Mpashalian Sasa. I'm the Chief Director for Transportation Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, Honorable Members, the Minister. I'm Jacob Kosana, Chief Director of Police Development.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Lorraine Rissa, the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Jefferson, Deputy Minister. My name is Romeo Adams. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Corporate Services.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Lawrence Bassett. I'm Chief Director in Legislation.
Good morning. My name is Ben Williams, and I am in the Office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Dumisani Kimbi, representing Western Cape in the NCOP. Originally, I'm from the Eastern Cape. I'm the member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Davi Soana. I'm a permanent delegate from the Eastern Cape province.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mo Chetty, permanent delegate, KZN.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Mishalagas. I'm the delegate from the Free State.
Good morning, Deputy Chair, Deputy Minister. My name is Lewin Zumanze from Pietermaritzburg. There's three people from Pietermaritzburg here today, together. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. Officials, good morning. Charles Julius, permanent delegate from Gauteng.
Dumelang, Tebogo Mokoele, permanent delegate, Gotsogoroko Mekupiri.
Today, my name is Gershwin Dixon, I'm the committee secretary for the committee.
Good morning, I'm Andrew van der Berg, committee secretary for the committee.
My name is Bukola Babalola. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Judith Chabalala. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members and Deputy Minister. Before we proceed to number four, briefing by the Department of Justice on the strategy plan, at about 12, I'll be asking the House to excuse me as I'm attending another meeting. But the procedure, and members know the procedure if the chairperson is not there. Thank you. I just want to mention that. Thank you very much. Let's proceed. We'll be having a briefing by the Department of Justice. Over to you, DG, or your chief. Thank you. I don't know whether the Deputy Minister first want to say something as the leading delegate.
Chairperson, thanks. Look, the department led by the DG will give, obviously, the input you can see it on the screen on the annual performance plan. Maybe just to highlight some areas and particularly trying to focus on the provincial issues. Obviously, our programs are aimed at intensifying the fight against crime and corruption, both in the ministry and the JCPS cluster, accelerating the transformation of the judicial system, including institutional reforms aimed at enhancing the independence of the judiciary as a separate branch of the state. As you're aware, there is a separate Office of Chief Justice being established, which will become a separate department, maximizing our programs aimed at enhancing access to justice, reinforcing measures aimed at the protection and promotion of the rights of vulnerable sectors of our society and the advancement of a rights-based society broadly. So those are the key areas. If you look at the National Development Plan, really the main issue is to enhance the functioning of the justice system. And I think the detail of that will be in the presentation. But maybe just to highlight some issues relating to the provinces. The Chief Justice has established a National Efficiency Enhancement Committee. Last year in October, this committee took a decision to establish provincial efficiency enhancement committees in each province. They were launched in November and December last year. Their job is cooperation and commitment of all relevant stakeholders in the efficient and effective adjudication of disputes in the courts, the proper implementation of norms and standards, and ensuring that the case flow management pilot project is properly understood and supported. So that is basically in terms of the Superior Courts Act, which provides for the judge presidents, that the provincial heads of court, to be responsible for the judicial officers, judges and magistrates in each province. The other aspect is obviously with the Superior Courts Act, the Limpopo and Mpumalanga High Courts are being physically built and will then be proclaimed as separate jurisdictions, and we would then have a high court for each of the nine provinces. There is a pilot project, which I'm sure the department, and in particular Mr. Skosana, will give more detail on, of aligning the magisterial districts, starting with Gauteng and Northwest, basically to align them more to the local government demarcations. Basically, they still you would still have the legacy of apartheid and the former homelands, where a area which may be closer to a town, a court in a town, people in that area have to go further away because they were part of a homeland, and the court for that area is some distance away. So a case in point is Marikana, which doesn't fall under Rustenburg, which is not too many kilometers away, but under some other part of the Ordea, which is over 100 kilometers away. So that process is being engaged in, and the process, particularly for Gauteng and the Northwest, starting with those provinces, is very near to finalization. I think those are the key issues I wanted to address, but maybe also just to highlight one which is quite topical, and that is the issue of the public protector. It's not so much a provincial matter, but seeing, if you look at the media from yesterday's press conference and debate, you'd think that was the only item in the justice budget. And I'm aware that at least one of the members here has written, has been publicly commenting on it in the media. But basically, the overall problem with the budget is insufficient funds. So there have been increases. The Director General can take you through what they are. With the issue of the Chapter 9s, and it's not just the Public Protector, it's the Human Rights Commission, their mandates are very broad. They should be broad. But the key issue is that they need to deal with the limited resources as best they can. The Public Protector has had quite a substantial increase over the last few years, way above inflation, to increase the investigative capacity. But unfortunately, there aren't further funds. The Public Protector and both the two Chapter 9 institutions coming through the justice budget account specifically to the National Assembly. But what we would urge is that there's more coordination with Parliament, with both houses, to ensure that recommendations and proposals for improvement in particularly the Justice Department are taken up, and that Parliament monitors the implementation of any such suggestions with the Department. Maybe just to also highlight, if it's one of the areas I've got responsibility for, small claims courts. We are aiming at one small claims court per magisterial district. We have got 100% coverage in Gauteng and the Mpumalanga. The problem is often, and Limpopo's representation is quite good. The problem area is sort of Western Cape, Eastern Cape particularly, Free State to a lesser extent, KZN to a lesser extent. But the problem is finding people who are prepared to be presiding officers in the smaller towns. Many of the attorneys say that no, they really don't actually want, and I've heard this particularly from the Eastern Cape, they really don't want a small claims court there because it will take away their bread and butter money. But it would be appreciated if the NCOP delegates, particularly from those provinces where there isn't 100% coverage, could assist with those areas in encouraging people to be commissioners. There have to be people who've got who are legal practitioners or who have practiced law for some time. It's basically attorneys, advocates, but even judicial officers, magistrates, Legal Aid South Africa support us quite a bit as well. And then really lastly, just as far as legislation, the Legal Aid Bill, which will be revamping the Legal Aid Act, the old 1969 Act, is being introduced into the National Assembly this week. Most of the justice matters are a section positive in terms of Section 75 of the Constitution as national competencies. There is then also an amendment to the Attorneys Act, which will be also tabled probably by next week, which is sort of short-term amendments until the Legal Practice Bill comes into effect, which will be in a few years because of the first step in that bill is the establishment of a consultative forum to resolve some of the outstanding issues, and they have a maximum of 3 years to deal with that. If any of the amendments bill, the main issue there is that attorneys who were in former Botswana and I think former Venda as well are not have their own law societies, and it would be to put them under existing or under the Law Society of the Northern Provinces for the moment. Those are the main. The bill that was with the NCOP that lapsed, which is the traditional courts bill, the department will be reworking on the bill and looking at trying to address the concerns that were raised by different IFAS groups and ensuring that there's greater consensus on the bill before it comes back to Parliament. The reality is that traditional courts exist in law under the Black Administration Act, an old, I think it's 1927 Act, so it even predates formal apartheid. So those courts exist. They do provide access to dispute resolution for many, many people who wouldn't normally have such access. But those courts need to be brought in line with the Constitution. So the existing situation of having those courts functioning without a proper legal framework, which is consistent with the Constitution, is not a good situation. So okay, let me leave it at that point and hand over to the DG to take you through the presentation.
Thank you, dear Chair. Before we hand over to the DG, three members of the committee are coming in. I want to welcome them. One is Honourable Mohapi from Free State. And secondly is Honorable Mhlanga from Mpumalanga. The last one is Honorable Manobele from Northern Cape. Thank you. Over.
One point, I'm very pleased to see that, I know people are here representing the provinces, but I'm hope that the spirit of non-partisanship will continue throughout the committee's work. Thank you.
Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Perhaps before I start, let me indicate that we provided a more comprehensive presentation, so there are two documents. It's the shorter version which we are going to do, especially being mindful of the time. but there's also a more comprehensive version that we did not so long ago, which gives all the information that we may not be able to cover today. We will also, if time permits, discuss our budget and our challenges, financial pressures, and what we intend doing about those, and highlight as well some of the projects that we're going to focus on, guided by the financial resources. Going straight to the presentation, we will deal with our mission, vision, principles, as well as values. We will locate our mandates back to the Constitution, as well as legislative instruments that exist. We will also locate it on our national policies. We will then deal with the risks and challenges that the department faces, and then focus then on the strategic objectives as they open from our strategy, as well as the annual performance plan for 2014-2015 financial year. Our vision is to have a transformed and accessible justice system that promotes and protects social justice and the rule of law. Our mission is to provide transparent, responsive and accountable justice services for all in South Africa. We are guided by the following principles and values: a commitment to constitutional values and a culture of human rights, promotion of the rule of law, the basic principles, good governance, ubuntu, professionalism and continuous improvement, as well as transparency. When we look at the constitutional mandate, we are guided by Chapter 12, which is established in terms of Chapter 12 now of the Constitution, which gives us a responsibility for court and administration of justice in South Africa. Not so long ago, Parliament passed the Constitution 17th Amendment Act of 2012, which was enacted in 2013, introducing significant amendments to Chapter 8 of the Constitution. The importance of this amendment is that it ushers Section 165, sub 6, which affirms the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary and assigns to him or her the responsibility to oversee the development and monitoring of norms and standards for the performance of all courts, as the CM has already articulated. Accompanying the Constitution 17th Amendment Act is the Superior Court Act of 2013, which was enacted in 2013. Both the Constitution 17 Amendment as well as the Superior Court Act came into operation on the 23rd of August 2013. Importantly, the Superior Court Act lays the basis for the judicial institutional reform by, one, establishing the legislative framework for the Chief Justice to exercise his or her judicial leadership responsibilities supported by the Office of the Chief Justice, as has been said earlier, prescribing a legislative mechanism for the rationalization of high courts, providing for the delegation of certain functions flowing from the Superior Court Act to the Office of the Chief Justice. Following the finalization of the Superior Court Act, and discussions with the Office of the Chief Justice have already been initiated, and we hope to finalize these discussions in 2014-2015 financial year. The discussions relate to the transfer of the administration of the Superior Court to the Office of the Chief Justice. In practice and on the ground, that has already happened, but obviously we need to finalize the government arrangements around that. The establishment of the fully functional internal controls and accounting system for the Office of the Chief Justice. That too has been done largely. The only thing that needs to now happen is for all of this work to be recognized by Treasury as appropriate, so that the vote can now be granted to the Office of the Chief Justice. The third point deals with the creation of separate votes for the Office of the Chief Justice. Our role as the Department of Justice is to only assist the process, both the Office of the Chief Justice as well as National Treasury, to finalize whatever issues Treasury may still have to be able to finalize the votes and issues. Then finally, the strengthening of governance structures of the South African Judicial Education Institute. This is the institute that is going to deal with the training of the judiciary. The institute is already in place and it is meeting, and the training has already started. But obviously, as the NDP guides, we need to ramp up training of the judiciary through this institute. Just for clarity, the institute is driven and will ultimately reside in the Office of the Chief Justice, because training of the judiciary, both in the superior courts and lower courts, is the responsibility of that office. When we move to legislative mandates, I will not deal with each and every one of them, Honourable Chair. I will just highlight those that we have specific work to do in this 2014-2015 annual performance plan. The Superior Court Act has already been dealt with sufficiently, so I will not go through it. The Magistrates Court Act of 1994 will require revamping in order to bring in line the transformation of the lower court judiciary to the transformation of the superior court that has been happening in the past many years. So that work is going to continue this year, and it's work that we anticipate will take the whole field of the MPSF. The Department of Justice is having ultimately the oversight over the National Prosecuting Authority in terms of the work that it does in the prosecution of crimes, all forms of crime. The department also is a conduit to a certain extent of resources from the department to the Special Investigations Unit. We also work very closely with the Asset Forfeiture Unit of the NPA within the offices of the JCPS cluster, which is the Justice Crime Prevention cluster. All these entities, we have a direct relationship with of one form or the other. We provide oversight, we provide reports relating to these entities, and we raise issues of concern internally within the justice environment if there are areas of concern to be raised in this context. Legal aid has already been dealt with. We will be moving legislation very shortly. In terms of updating and bringing into line the legal aid legislation so that it is in line with the current constitution. The law establishing law reform as well as rule making is part of our responsibility, and we continue to ensure that these institutions are provided the capacity to be able to perform their responsibilities in terms of the law. Key to the responsibility of providing for vulnerable groups is a responsibility to take care of matters of the High Court in South Africa. In this particular area of work, we deal with insolvent estates as well as garden farms. Now, when I talk about insolvent estates, we do all insolvent estates in South Africa, but the focus in the past year and going forward has been on dealing with the backlogs in where we had backlogs in the lowest of the insolvent estates, which would range from 125,000 and beyond, because those are the most in number, most work, yet the bills are very low, but the owners of those estates would be very vulnerable people, and that is why we are prioritizing them. Equally in the Guardian Fund, we are prioritizing the payments in the Guardian Fund, as we will show a little later in the presentation. The priority we give is precisely because most of the Guardian Fund monies go to the vulnerable young people, as well as those that are headed, that are young people heading households on their own. And it is important at that stage to provide them with relief as quickly as possible. Other pieces of legislation that we cover are related to Chapter 9 institutions, which I'm not going to deal with because the Deputy Minister has covered them quite, I think, succinctly. We then move to the protection of vulnerable groups. We manage and are responsible for giving effect to a number of pieces of legislation that were passed for the advancement of rights of children. Included in that package is the Child Justice Act of 2008, the Children's Act of 2005, the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act of 2007, the Maintenance Act of 1998, which we will also be moving an amendment to, as well as the Domestic Violence Act of 1998, which we will also be moving an amendment to, just to bring it in line with the experiences South Africans are experiencing and ensuring that we mitigate against the violence which is gender-based. Legislation relating to debt collectors is also our responsibility, as well as legislation relating to sheriffs, which we must indicate that we are very grateful for the assistance we received from Parliament in finalizing the sheriff's legislation, because as a result of that, we've done a lot of work in bringing appointments in line with the requirements of the Constitution for the various and ensuring that all the vacant posts that have been vacant for many years have now been filled, and we continue to fill them now as and when they become available. Now we need to move to give comfort to this Honourable House on how we've aligned the work that we are doing to the requirements and demands of the National Development Plan to give a sense of how we are going to travel this road to Horizon 2030 that the National Development Plan has given to us. We will take chapter by chapter of the National Development Plan, not into significant detail, but to give you a sense of what are we doing in that area. So we start with chapter 11, which relates to social protection. When we deal with social protection in our environment, we look at those that are most vulnerable and that generally are not in conflict with the law themselves, and they need our services just because we are a Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. So one of those areas is the maintenance services that we provide, and we, over the past 2 years, maybe 3 years or so, we've been ramping up the services that we are rendering in providing maintenance services. What we've been doing is we've been improving the turnaround times in terms of which we pay maintenance. Firstly, we've also been improving the turnaround times in assisting the complainant to get the maintenance orders as quick as possible. We've improved our ICT systems to enable us to pay maintenance at a faster rate and at a more accurate rate, comparatively speaking, to the years where sometimes we ended up paying maintenance to incorrect beneficiaries, as it were. We've also ramped up our training and capacitation of our staff members and costs. And please, if you should see that in your visits, off-site visits to court, that all of this is still not happening on the ground, we would welcome feedback so that we can address it even at a more faster rate than we have been doing in the past. Similarly, the surge turnaround in the Mathers branch has been one area that we have been very proud of, given the fact that in this branch we've had unqualified audits in the past few years, and now we have absolutely clean audits, and we hope to retain that. We've invested in ICT systems quite significantly in the Mathers environment, and we will continue to do that because we are using that branch as a model of a paperless system that we want to use going forward in paying out those that we should pay out from the Guardian Fund in particular. In addition, we had a challenge in the past 2 years in the family advocate services, and these are services that are specifically directed at nine children who are born from families in conflict of one form or the other, resulting in divorce. We've targeted improving mediation services towards full compliance with legislation, improving turnaround times in lodging children's reports with the court, widening the net of child protection against harmful effects of international child abduction in line with the Hague Convention. In particular, we are increasing acceptance of our accession to include our nearest neighbors, Lesotho and Zimbabwe. That's because we've had a number of inter-country negotiations about them being able to benefit from the work that we are doing in this area, and us vice versa in the area where we, our own children, South African children, are affected in their jurisdiction. We now move to chapter 12, which is building safer communities. In this area, we are going to continue with the work that was started a few administrations ago, which is driving the 7-point plan, which is work that arose from the review of the criminal justice system. Already a lot of work has been done on the ground, and our view is supported by international research is that crime, even though it is still at unacceptable levels, it is coming down as borne out by that research. What we are going to be doing in this current financial year is increasing usage of audiovisual demand systems, implementation of digital court record system, which we started about 2 years ago, and we are continuing, and these projects are going very well, and they are assisting us in managing our records a lot better compared to what we used to experience, where we used to lose court records quite a lot. Mm. We are also improving the court record transcription to avoid the delays where court records are not available when people appeal. We want to improve the management of criminal appeal processes as well as reduce. In that area, we want to reduce the time it takes us to make the records available to those who wish to prosecute appeal. Decreasing the rate of court postponements due to administrative challenges. Honorable Chair, for the first time in the department, we've decided to measure all our contributions towards cases not being finalized on time or being delayed or whatever the reason is. This is an area we started measuring this year specifically to try and address those indiscretions, if I may call it, there for the purposes of this presentation, that would result in people not being able to get justice as quickly and as soon as possible. And we are hoping that by measuring this area, all the interventions that are necessary will then be done. We will also be providing an integrated and a seamless national criminal justice system information system to facilitate more the development of more informed strategies, plans, and decision-making in the criminal justice system. We want to develop and implement protocols and improve court efficiency. I must indicate that a number of protocols have already been developed and are in place and, in our view, are working. But obviously, there are those areas that we still have to continue with that work. We now move to, we continue with building safer communities, but in this particular component, we want to deal with access to justice as a critical component of building safer communities. In line with these initiatives, the department will continue to convert branch costs into full service costs in line with the available budget, obviously. This project addresses the legacies of the past and the inequalities to access to justice. This is the project that the Deputy Minister has already spoken to briefly on the redemarcation of magisterial court boundaries. We want to align magisterial boundaries with municipal boundaries to improve access to justice. We want to also just thank honorable members, because some may not be in this honorable house, have participated in some of the consultation processes that we have already undertaken quite comprehensively for Gauteng in particular, as well as Northwest, where we'll be commencing the project soon. We are continuing our assignments to build courts in line with the available budget. The focus has always been in areas where there has been no court before, but naturally in areas where there are courts, we are also adding courtrooms where we have capacity to do so, and we are also revamping courts where we have capacity to do so. Small claims courts have been dealt with, so I will not go into them in detail, but that was then dealing with access to justice. In continuing to protect the vulnerable under building the safer communities, we are re-establishing, as has been started in the previous administration, a dedicated special offences court, both in terms of capacity to work in those courts, establishing court infrastructure itself, amending legislation where that is necessary. All of that is being done in the context of building safer communities and protecting the vulnerable groups. We are implementing the National Action Plan regarding management of crimes against the lesbian, gays, bisexual, transsexual, and intersex communities, which we in short call the LGBTI community. This work we are doing because we want to assure every South African that the constitutional requirements, at least that it requires of all of us, is to assure that every South African receives protection, legal protection, regardless of their sexual orientation. The implementation of the National Action Plan on domestic violence is also afoot. The continuation of the project to include historical data into the National Register of Sexual Offenders is also going according to plan. Obviously, we were advised by Parliament to consider merging the register, the one that we have, which is the Register on Sexual Offences, as well as that of the Child protection register is managed by the Department of Social Development, we could assure this House that those negotiations and discussions are on track, and we will be reporting to this Honourable House at an appropriate time. Finally, we are fast-checking cases in relation to violent service delivery protests that we have seen in the recent past, and we are also appealing the Honourable Member to assist us in areas where they feel that there are areas we are probably blind to that may result in violent protests, so that we can prevent them rather than try and shift them when they happen. Key to the work that we do is to also protect people against harmful practices such as drugs, and in this particular case we moved a bill through the Honourable Parliament in relation to Nyaupe and Wonga, and this bill was passed, and we are now quite comfortable that the implementation of the act can now be taken seriously in terms of the prevention side, much more than probably any other area. Chapter 13 of the NDP talks about building a capable state. In this area, building a capable state, we've broken it down to building capacity, and in this particular case, we are focusing on building capacity of women, especially in our department and in the legal system. We are in partnership with SAULA, which is the South African Women Lawyers Association, where we do projects at various times of the year, but we also want to exchange knowledge with this body going forward. This relationship has been ongoing for years, and we have been funding it as the Department of Justice. We are also assisting the South African chapter of the International Association of Women Judges, again, because the focus, as has been heard yesterday, is to grow a pool of women from which the judges can actually be appointed, women judges can be appointed. Within the department, we started a program called the Executive Leadership Development Program, specifically tailored for women, senior women in the department. 20 of the senior women are already participating in this program, and we hope to then extend it to both senior and middle management, because it's a managerial program. And we believe that if we do that, we will have a better capacity in the department to manage the challenges that the department is facing. We have a justice college that is specifically focused on training our own people in the department, both on administrative issues, as well as training interpreters, class supports, to a certain extent prosecutors, and the legal aid people, quite distinct from the training that I articulated earlier, which is done by the South African Judicial Education Institute. So the work that I was talking about earlier relating to sexual offences, domestic violence, and all the related pieces of legislation I indicated are trained and, within the auspices of Justice College. We are also providing bursaries for people that would like, firstly, to work in the justice sector, but also those that are already within the justice sector, to be able to build and enhance their skills as part of building a capable state. In particular, recently, we started focusing on cyber law because we've seen South Africa's vulnerabilities in the area of cyber law. So we trained a number of people in the NPA as well as in the courts, and as a result, we are seeing quite positive results, perhaps in excess of 80% or so of the prosecution of the cyber security law cases. The bursaries that we have struggled across a number of fields, in specifically 28 fields, and we are also starting to train people not only in areas of law as we used to do before, because we realize that our department needs skills that are slightly in addition to the base skills, which would be your legal skills. And in this area, some of these skills that we are training in are intended to improve the overall management of the department. You will see the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the bursaries that we have throughout the department. They are set out, the breakdown is set out there, but the total is 1,481. We are also focusing, we are very grateful that our minister is very passionate about youth development. So we are focusing quite intensively on building capacity and training youth and giving them exposure into the work that we do as the department, but also into the work that the government does. We offer learnerships in 2013-2014. We had an intake of 308 learners. We are reducing that number this year, perhaps in the first part of the year, but going forward in the MTSS period, we will increase that number again. We had a lot of near misses in terms of challenges with our 308 intakes, and we want to refine that before we take a bigger number going forward. We had reduced the number of internships that were taken in the department in the past year, but that number, we increased it quite significantly for 2014-2015. The reason why we had a reduction the previous year is that we had challenges in terms of capacity, in terms of mentoring specifically. There's no point in us having interns when we do not have capacity to mentor them. So we are building programs now, mentorship programs, to be able to train the young people that are joining the department in this area. I must indicate that from the interns that we have had in the past, we've absorbed quite a significant number of those. Very few have left the department. Some of those that left the department went on to bigger things outside our environment, and we are quite heartened by that. So part of the building of a capable state is also looking at the development management systems to enable us as management in the department to manage the work that we do a lot better, but also to manage the services that we render a lot better. Our strategy is underpinned by three areas. It's underpinned by people and people development, which is the area I already covered. It's underpinned by systems, in particular ICT systems, which I'm about to cover, and then obviously it's managed by, it's underpinned by stronger, building stronger administration and stronger governance in the organization, which I'll cover slightly later when I go to program one. So we've built a number of systems in the department, in particular case management systems. These are systems that we use to report. These are systems that tell us how many cases went to which court, what was the outcome. We think cases are being delayed, or we think the cases are moving at the rate at which they should be moving. We are developing new systems for the state attorneys in the department, because this is an area I must admit with a heavy heart, where we as the Department of Justice have not invested quite categorically and decisively in building capacity in the state attorney. And so this 2014-2015 and beyond, we've turned it for ourselves as the year for the state attorney going forward. We want to continue implementing the integrated justice system in the department to address those blockages that are stubborn and continue to obtain in the criminal justice system. We are also introducing systems that will assist the department to achieve and sustain an unqualified audit opinion for the department in part, but also for the third part funds, which we will speak to a little later. As I indicated earlier, we are continuing with projects on digitization of court records, as well as audiovisual remand system, which we are doing in partnership with correctional services. Well, we used to say that before when we were not one department. Now that we are one department, we are going to be optimizing and maximizing that synergy a little more. Chapter 14, promoting accountability and fighting corruption. The MDP directs us to do a number of interventions in this area. What appears on the left is what the MDP says. What appears on the right in the table is what we think we will do to respond to the direction given by the MDP. It asks us, the MDP, then, to scale up judicial training dramatically and as quickly as possible. As I indicated, SAJE is being capacitated to be able to do that. One of the things that we are going to do is to improve the arrangement, the governance arrangement in SAJE, and that we will do through the amendment of the SAJE Act. Why are we amending the Act? Is that currently the Act as it stands, it makes such aid as an institution to be resident and accounted for by the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. But now that the Office of the Chief Justice has been established as a separate office, the appropriate location of such aid should be in the office, and that is why we are talking about the, in case members think that what we are saying does not respond to what such aid, what the NDP has directed us to do about such aid. Secondly, the NDP requires us to accelerate reforms to implement a judiciary-led independent court administration. We will be working on a discussion document to direct this work going forward. I must indicate that the Chief Justice has given us a comprehensive document from which we will then be synthesizing how we see this project going forward. Thirdly, the NDP requires us to establish a clear criteria for the appointment of judges with emphasis on the candidates' progressive credentials and transformative judicial philosophy and expertise. Here, we are going to be developing guidelines in areas where these have not been established. Where they have been established, we will be fast-tracking the consultation with the judiciary as we normally do. Consider the structure and effectiveness of the Judicial Service Commission. Our view is that this responsibility will be best implemented by the Office of the Chief Justice, and this is the area they will report to this Honourable House on. Then consider the extension of community service to legal graduates to promote speedy finalization of cases, particularly in lower courts. Our view is that once the legal practice bill has been approved, attended to, we will use that instrument to fast track this work and ensure that we provide access both to training for graduates, but also access to those who need legal services at a reasonable rate. But also, in addition, the legal practice bill will assist us in also managing the cost of litigation in South Africa going forward. We then move to promoting accountability and fighting corruption, but insofar as it is work within the JCES cluster done by the anti-corruption task team, which was formed 2 years ago by Cabinet. Currently, more than 800 persons are under criminal, financial, and forensic investigation, with pre-trial proceedings initiated against 298 of those persons by the end of December 2013. Extra-trial proceedings have been initiated against 174 persons by December 2013, and in June 2013, the JCPS cluster demonstrated its commitment to deal with corruption by releasing a list of names of those people that have been found guilty of fraud and corruption. At that stage, the names were 42. Those names have since gone up to 48. We are also continuing through the AFU to freeze assets of those people who are getting ill-gotten gains from corruption. 67 of those were done, freezing orders were done in December 2013. This work is going to continue during this MTFF cycle as well. Then we move to Chapter 15, which deals with transforming society and uniting our country. In this area, we are focusing our work on PAJA, in particular the partnership that we've had with GIZ, the government funding that we are receiving for this work. We believe that this funding is going to assist us to fast-track the work that we've been lagging slightly behind in terms of finalizing the regulations as well as ensuring that a broader policy framework is in place to drive PAJA work. In 2014-2015 financial year, we are increasing our efforts to build capacity in departments to deal with the maintaining of administration of PAJA. This project is managed through the governance and administration cluster, and we were given a number of institutions where we are going to, this cluster, where we are going to start this work going forward. Obviously, we will continue training through the Justice College in this area of work, as well as in the area of FIRE, which is Promotion of Access to Information Act. In that area of work, we are building our capacity both on the ground to deal with outstanding requests. I must indicate, as we will show a little later in the presentation, that we were doing so well in FIRE that we felt that we were on top of our game until in 2013 and 2014, we received a flood of appeals, and those appeals are not appeals against our decisions, but they were appeals for lost records, and as a result, we are finding ourselves as slightly back in terms of processing those claims on time. But I can assure members that this now is within our line of sight, and as we move forward, we should be on top of this work again. Last year, we finalized a policy, at least at the department, working with chapter-nine institutions, civil society organizations, as well as non-governmental organizations to improve our work on PECUDA, in particular, focusing on criminalizing racism, because PECUDA, as it stands, is legislation that was intended to engage people, ensure that people do away with racism on their own, but seemingly racism is still rearing its ugly head, and the question is whether or not it is time to move in the direction of criminalizing racism in South Africa. And that work is intended to achieve that, and is intended to contribute towards uniting our country and transforming society. We want to also create an actively engaged citizenry in the culture of human rights as well as tolerance. There are a number of programs that we are doing, that we are working on in this area. We are also assisted by other players, such as the Foundation for Human Rights, that does a lot of work in the communities, because clearly the Department of Justice, together with the Chapter 9 institutions, are not adequate in terms of spreading the rights that flow out of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution through all corners of this country. And that is why we need every partner we can get. The LGBTI work I've already indicated, and the National Action Plan on Racism is work that we will be finally taking through to cabinet in not too distant a future from now. Additional to these projects that I've already indicated is the work on the TRC, which we will deal with in more detail towards the end of the presentation. Many issues have been raised about the official languages used in our court system. These are areas that we've taken into heart, and we are resuscitating some of those projects that we were already doing. But what we are trying to indicate this year is that we are going to undertake a little bit of research to establish what went wrong in areas where these projects did not succeed. How do we do them better this time, so that at least when we say we are reintroducing courts that will utilize other languages other than the two language, official languages, which is English and Afrikaans, then we put all our ducks in the row. We now move to the medium-term strategic framework. In this area, I'll move very quickly because the more detailed presentation covers these areas. I spent more time in the earlier part of the presentation because I really wanted honourable members to be comfortable that we have not glossed over the existence of the NDP. Now, in areas of reducing levels of contact crime, which is the first outcome, we want to focus on the conviction rate on sexual offences, the conviction rate on trio crimes, which are robbery on residential premises, robbery at business premises, as well as vehicle robbery and or car hijacking. Outcome two, an efficient and effective criminal justice system. In this area, we will be developing strategic business plans for the ICT side of our business as a cluster, reducing a number of criminal cases in the backlog role, which I think they're doing very well, but as long as cases are not finalized on time, there will always be people who will not have access to justice and feel justice being done on time. And we are also improving management of our KPIs in terms of the criminal justice system. Securing cyberspace, here we adopted a policy about a year, a little over a year ago, and we are now implementing the policy as developed by the Department of State Security as part of a cluster. And here I've already indicated positive results from the prosecution of those cases by the National Prosecuting Authority. In terms of corruption in the public sector, we are improving on convictions. The difficulty that you are not seeing the numbers coming out probably strongly is because how cases have been reported previously, we were not indicating that this corruption was committed by a person in the civil service, and that is so it's treated as corruption. So we need to go manually and ensure that those numbers are worked on a manual basis rather than on an electronic system. Transformation of state legal services, basically, even though the whole focus is not on the state attorney alone, we've decided to prioritize the state attorney in the transformation of state legal services. We are very grateful to Parliament for having approved on an almost on an urgent basis a bill amending the State Attorneys Act of 1957, yes, as it then stood, because that approval has enabled us to achieve two things. Firstly, to address the capacitation of the state attorneys, where we will improve the management of claims to avoid prescription. We will improve the management of capacity in the state attorney to avoid default judgment and reduce significantly the default judgment that we have been getting recently. We want to improve the monitoring system in the state attorneys. As indicated, we already developed a case flow, case management system in the state attorneys. Inconsistency in the determination of cattle fees, honorable members would have heard that, and this is the area that we are going to be focusing in this particular financial year, as well as improving the success rate of the state attorneys. So how are we going to do this? One of the key things that we are going to do, and we are almost at the tail end of finalizing administrative processes for, is the appointment of the Solicitor General, who will be the head of the state attorney. This person, called the Solicitor General, will be responsible for the state attorneys in all nine regions, all nine provinces. And all these state attorneys are going to report to this person with a view that the person will develop the norms and standards for running the state attorney, develop how it shall deal with the previously disadvantaged individuals in terms of the allocation of gifts, both to attorneys as well as to advocates, as well as ensure that there is proper professionalism within the ranks of the state attorney. Transformation of the judicial system and the role of the judiciary in the development, in the developmental South Africa. We, as the Department of Justice, entered into a partnership the year before last, for this research to be undertaken. I can't speak a lot about the research because a lot of processing, governance processing, still has to happen. I must indicate, however, that the document that has come out of the research is looking very, very positive, in spite of the negative criticism that we had received when this project was started. I'm really very hopeful that once we start speaking about the project, honorable members will see the value in the project and see their role in terms of providing oversight responsibility over some of the work that must happen in court. I'm not talking oversight over the judiciary, but some of the outcomes of the court processes. We will be developing a blueprint on the transformation of lower courts and the court administration, as I had already indicated, that the legislation governing the magistrates' courts is the 1944 Act, and that must then be brought in line with the current development of the transformation of the superior court, a project which is nearing its tail end with the passing of the Superior Court Act in 2013. Overall, I think most of the issues that are dealt with there have already been touched by the DM. Moving now to the insolvency policy, we have developed the insolvency policy. We were supposed to start implementing it on the 31st of March 2014. That process was interrupted, and we are working our way towards reworking that policy into a white paper form so that we can bring the transformative initiatives that we want to bring about that were designed to be brought about by the insolvency policy. The legal practice bill has already been spoken about earlier. The focus on the legal practice bill is really building capacity in the legal profession, broadening the legal profession, building credibility, and ensuring that we begin to have a fertile environment from which the judiciary will be appointed going forward. We are also wanting to ensure that we build capacity to provide access to legal services to all South Africans, and we are hoping this instrument called the Legal Practice Bill, once it becomes the Act, it will assist us with that. I will not deal with all the issues in this slide, Chair. Suffice to again make an emphasis on the work that we need to do in fighting harmful practices such as drugs in South Africa. It's really very sad to see young people being victims of drugs. This work we do within the context of a cluster. In relation to protecting vulnerable groups, Chair, I've already spoken about the national sub-team that does the work on the LGBTI. I can only just highlight on this slide the terms of reference that were adopted by the national sub-team, the terms of reference for the rapid response team, which must work on the ground in every province to ensure that there is prevention on the one hand, and where ultimately people are violated because of their sexual orientation, that legal action is taken by the appropriate people. Key to the concerns by this community has been that their cases are not moving fast enough in the criminal justice system, and we've almost turned the corner in this regard. But they were also saying they are not treated with dignity in the legal system. And this too, when we talk about community education, and we are talking about, amongst others, ensuring that South Africans, as well as those in particular who work in the criminal justice system, know and understand the rights of the LGBTI community and treat them with respect the same way as they would have treated anybody else in let's go through the legal system with respect. The National Action Plan, arising from the Durban Declaration of 2000 to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerances, is nearing conclusion. In fact, we had wanted to process it through the Kenneth processes last year in March 2013, and further work that must now happen is going to happen in terms of engaging chapter 9 institutions, business, labor, media, and all stakeholders to ensure that we have a common vision around preventing all these intolerances in South Africa. So then allow me now to move to our strategic goals. I'm still on time, I hope. We have five strategic goals. Firstly, enhancing organizational performance on all aspects of administration in line with set standards, as well as meeting and exceeding the expectations of those that we serve. Second goal is to facilitate the effective and efficient resolution of criminal and civil, as well as family law disputes by providing accessible, efficient, and quality administrative support to court. Effective and cost-efficient provision of state legal services that anticipate, meet, and exceed stakeholders' needs and expectations. That is goal three. Goal four, effective coordination of the JCPS cluster in the delivery of outcome three. Before honorable members ask whether we still need this goal in our APP as well as in our strategy, our view is that we still do, because as the Department of Justice, we still coordinate all the players in the justice sector and contribute through the JCPS cluster, even though we are no longer the coordinator and chair of the JCPS cluster. Goal 5 is promotion of the Constitution and its values. What are our risks? What are our challenges which we have identified in the recent past? Firstly, we have the occupational specific dispensation, which remains the biggest risk in terms of capacity of the department to achieve its objectives, particularly in the following areas: the state attorney, the national prosecuting authority, the state law advisor, and other areas in the business, the public protector and human rights commission. All of them are affected by OECD. So similarly, we are also affected as the department by this. But it's not as if we are sitting and not doing anything about it. We are engaging the responsible department that is responsible for OECD going forward. The migration of certain functions to the Office of the Chief Justice remains a risk, but a risk that we believe we will be able to manage. We put in place plans to ensure that we are able to manage that risk. But any separation, whether in business or in the public sector, poses a risk until that separation has been finalized. The dependence of the department for its infrastructural requirements to the Department of Public Works remains a big risk, as will be shown later in our budget. We were not able to deliver infrastructure that we wanted to deliver, and we had resources to deliver on time, and some of it at all because of some of the delays that we experienced with public works. We must indicate that Parliament had been very kind in awarding us a lot of money through National Treasury, obviously, for infrastructure. And I think last year we had $1 billion, which we were not able to spend precisely because of the delays in public works. Despite the efforts to address some of the projects that we are doing in the ICT environment, which I said was a key in our strategy, we have not been able to finalize those because of the delays associated with CETA, through which we must procure ICT infrastructure. There are ongoing challenges, in particular in relation to our courts, in particular because of the space of our courts, the age of our courts, and the volume that our courts are taking. But also, we are beginning to see the risks of people being unhappy either with court decisions or unhappy with whatever is happening in society, and therefore turn their anger into the government infrastructure, as has been seen in KZN recently. Where is our funding going, and where do we think our funding is going to go in the next MPSF? Obviously, we are focusing more energy on protecting vulnerable groups. As I indicated, you can see the numbers, the 5.2 million spent in 13-14 financial year, as well as 3.3 million already in 2013-14 financial year. We had already spent 1.1 just in the Children's Act. We want to spend a lot more money in capacitating state legal services. We've put aside 15 million for that purpose, but we must indicate to this Honourable House that is not going to change our narrative, 14 million, but obviously resources are limited, as the DM had already indicated earlier, and we must work with what we have. Other funding constraints are in the security environment. We have been saying this over the years, and this narrative has not changed, even though we've done everything that we could do as a department to cut some security costs, renegotiate security contracts, structure a new contract altogether to reduce costs. We are suffering in terms of coverage to all our costs in terms of security services. We are focusing on improving our facilities, especially under Program 2, which is cost services. We want to improve our infrastructure. We want to increase the establishment of lower court in particular, because we believe that's where most cases are processed. And if there is a backlog in terms of capacity there, it means a lot more people will not have access to justice. Similarly, Bullet E, which talks about occupational safety. Our buildings at the Department of Justice, not all of them, but majority of them, are very old and are carrying a lot more numbers than they should. And as a result, we are feeling that lifts are, in most cases, are not working as well as they should, and it's a risk, particularly to people with disabilities who cannot make way from the 28th floor of SALU down to the ground floor. It really would be a challenge if these situations are not addressed going forward. I will not cover everything, Chair. I've given you just a sense of some of the challenges that we face. But I will not leave without having indicated that Commission of Inquiry remain a challenge for us, because we, as the Department of Justice, have to fund them whenever they are announced. The most recent one, having been announced, must also be funded by ourselves. And you can see that with the resources that are already shrinking, if we have additional obligations, it does present a challenge to us. The Chief Financial Officer will cover in some smaller, better detail some of the challenges that we are facing in the budget. So, Chairperson, before I start now at a programmatic level, I thought I would seek guidance whether Chair would wish that we proceed or would wish that we move half before we start. At a programmatic level, we will move a lot faster, Chair, I must indicate. Thanks.
Members?
Thank you. I think to the person that we just go for charities because of the time, but we are going to have that time, we are going to go out of this meeting. Then we see after the charities whether we can proceed or we can adjourn for that next time, because even now there's a lot of information that we need to have clarity.
Are we together, members? Are we supporting the suggestion? Or we?
Not leaving the
suggestion. I'm not quite sure what is the proposal, Chair. Is that we engage with this one and don't take the further ones, what? Because we do have to take the programmatic, Chair. Those are the critical ones that are left now. So I'm not sure what is the proposal. If clarify for us.
Yes, the proposal is that can we continue to take this then after we ask for clarity, and therefore the honourable member said let's stop and ask clarity for the exact one that we have already tabled. Honourable member.
Thank you, Chair. We'll make a counter proposal that we continue with the program because some questions might be answered in the second part of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just looking at my time now. I think that before we continue, can we, because I know I cannot just go out, can we ask the secretary, because I have to leave, because we are leaving it. Quarter to 12, and there is a procedure that they have to follow before I leave. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Members, we should have to quickly let the acting chairperson. Could I get a nomination for acting chairperson? Honourable,
can we ask Honourable Hanregui to chair for us, Chair, if she's available to act for us?
Honourable Manapone, do you accept any further nominations? None? Honourable Manapone, would you please take a chair? Thank you.
Thank you, Lord. I think we can proceed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. we have under administration a service charter to improve our services. Under this area, we deal with a few things. A presidential hotline is one of them. I must indicate, honourable members, that this is an ongoing work which we have been doing reasonably well in. In fact, we are among the first 5, not 10 departments that are performing very well in this area of responding to queries arising from the presidential hotline. In the area of appeals, this is an area that I've indicated that is posing a bit of a problem, but that's because we discovered this problem, at least to the extent of the problem, in about a year or two ago, and we are now putting in place interventions to ensure that we do not have a problem going forward. For 2014-2015 financial year, we are planning to have a performance of 87% of cases of the presidential hotline having been finalized. Under program 2, we are dealing with case finalization, access to justice, protection of vulnerable groups, and constitutional advocacy. Insofar as the project that we want to speak to the Honourable House about is the project relating to case backlog, ensuring that we finalise those cases timely. We must indicate that as March 2014, we were already at 27,582 cases in the backlog cases. And our view that we had said in terms of the agreement that the Minister had entered into with the Office of the Presidency or Office of the President that we would do the reduction of 2%, and our view is that we even though we are not at 2% at all times, we are sitting within the 2% range. During the MTSF as well, part of what we want to improve on is the performance, monitoring of performance of the NPA, in particular in relation to their input into the ICNS system going forward. Family advocate issues, I had already indicated some of the challenges that we experienced with the Office of the Family Advocate, resulting to the extension of jurisdiction of that office and ensuring that now divorces are held in regional courts, which did not happen previously. It has stretched the Office of the Family Advocate quite significantly, but we've since built and continue to build capacity in that area for the Office of the Family Advocate to perform at its best. And as we indicate now later in the presentation, the performance is already surpassed that which we had targeted last year as a result of the intervention that we've made, and we are hoping that this year we are also going to surpass performance going forward. Improving quasi-judicial indicators, previously until about a year ago, we were not measuring quasi-judicial indicators. And these are indicators where clerks of courts, taxing masters and the like, do these responsibilities such as taxation, default judgments, unopposed default judgments and the like. And these are areas that we are now monitoring to ensure that the performance of our officials in the court environment is on track. And you can see for 2014-2015 financial year, we want for unopposed taxations to increase the target from 60% to 70%. And obviously we will also be improving the target for television. We also want to improve our performance on audiovisual remand systems in relation to the postponement of cases in both magistrate courts where we do have the audiovisual remand system. And in this particular environment, we want at least 8,000 cases for 2014-2015 financial year to be done, the postponement thereof to be done via audio visual remand. Turning now to access to justice, I spoken briefly on the conversion of branch court into full service court. Now, what does this mean? It means that the branch court used to be court that only deal with criminal matters, but did not provide services such as your maintenance and the like. And these are services that we are saying, when you convert a branch court into a full service court, you want all those basket of services to be offered to the deaf community. It costs a lot of money to do conversions naturally, and that is why we do them as a number per period. And for the current year, we are going to be converting four branch courts into full service courts. And we are hoping to increase this portfolio as we move forward. Our annual report will show you historically how far we've gone in terms of the conversion of branch courts. Then the alignment of magisterial districts to municipal boundaries. In this particular case, we said we are going to start with Gauteng and Northwest in terms of the alignment. And that's, I think we'll take a question on when we take questions, just to bring clarity to that debate. We want to give a sense on slide 62 of where are these small claims caught. Without having to read all of them, but for the benefit of honorable members, we have a pool of them in KZN, even though the coverage is not complete. Pool in Free State, in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, we have the full coverage, as well as in Gauteng already. But obviously, we are going to continue with areas where we do not have full coverage going forward. Building courts, we've already built 35 courts from 1994 to date, and we must say that some of our courts are state-of-the-art, and really we are looking forward to them being very well looked after by our own officials, but protected by communities in which these courts are situated. And other projects that we will be undertaking in 2014-2015 financial year, in particular, we will be focusing on Blessenberg Bay Magistrate Court, which is a design period. So in 2014-2015, we will be working on design. All of these projects we will start building in 2016-2017 financial year. Working on design takes a while. So if I may run quickly through them, it's Blessenberg Bay for Shepston. The Limpopo is already underway, the Limpopo High Court. It's at roof level, I think, at the stage. Mpumalanga High Court, construction has just commenced. Mamelodi, construction will commence in 2016-17 financial year, but planning has commenced. In fact, if it wasn't the delays in the public works environment, the tender closed last year already on Mamelodi, if my memory serves me correctly. Major refurbishment for Justicia building, as well as the Port Elizabeth High Court, will go into construction in 2016-17 financial year. I will not go through each of those, as well as capital works that we are going to be dealing with in the period that I already indicated. That's the level of detail that we are providing, honorable members. Honourable Chair, we are doing a lot of public education around educating people around maintenance services that we render. We reached 618 people in KZN alone. 436 people attended the sessions that we had undertaken in KZN. In Eastern Cape, 363 people attended sessions that we were doing. In Mpumalanga, 460, and the number goes on as we've indicated in the presentation. The reason why we do this is because in some instances we find that people do not claim maintenance when in fact the other party is paying maintenance into our court, and that results in us holding money and those monies not going to the most vulnerable children who may need those monies for their education and upkeep. During the past financial year, we paid out more than 3 million maintenance, which was unclaimed at that period in time, using the benefit of radio adverts and inviting people to come through if they thought we owed them money. Because in some instances, if we do not have the right details, we do not pay out to anybody else until we have absolute confirmation. We started paying maintenance through electronic fund transfer in 2010, and I think we paid a very small number. I think that project started only in 10 costs, moved to 20 costs. We now have almost 98% coverage of people that are paid maintenance through electronic fund transfer. Why are we thinking and shouting about this? It's because we are paying people a lot faster now. We pay within a day up to 3 days in terms of paying maintenance. We are paying a lot more accurately. We are creating a record of payment rather than just money being done at the back of the matches of a network. And we believe that we now have better records. We can deal with queries a lot faster, but we are also improving our accountability in terms of improving our administration in the department. Sexual offences court, last year we finalised 22 courtrooms. This year we've already finalised about 8 of the 10 that we said, 4 of the 5 that we said we were going to do within the 100 days of the current administration. Obviously, those will now be in line for to be launched. As we speak, at the end of March 2013, we already had 15,452 names that were included in the register for sexual offences. And this, in our view, will assist us to protect the vulnerable children and those that have mental disabilities and are protected in terms of the sexual offences register. In partnership with the police, we are getting a lot of data from the police. Obviously, it takes time to clean the data for it to be able to be included in the sexual offences register, but they are improving their systems. We are improving our own in terms of intake of data, and we are hoping that going forward this project will turn out to be a lot better. Slide 70 is showing honourable members where these sexual offences courts are, and in some instances where we have high volumes, we even have more courtrooms than just one court. And the reason why we do that is because we do not want to delay. We have said we were going to prioritize sexual offences courts wherever they happen, and therefore we've created in some areas more capacity because those courts have seen a lot more in terms of volume. We now move to sexual services. In this area, there are category of services: the master services, the litigation services, as well as legal services, the advisory services through the chief legal advisor, and legislation development. In terms of the masters, we are again paying via electronic fund transfer all monies that must be paid out of the Guardian Fund. We've improved our systems of payment, and in the current finance, well, the past financial year, we already were sitting at 96% of payment, and in the period under review, we want to maintain that. We're improving our systems of identification. Honourable members, MOVIT is a system that we use to identify and verify whether the person who makes an application is the right person to be making an application. We use the thumbprint in the system to check who you are. We are running the PS system for trust, for as well as other services such as estate services in the master's environment. I am very proud to tell Honourable Member Mr. Mhlanga that in Nelspruit, we are already having a Nelspruit office running on a paperless system, complete paperless. And that helps us to improve our services, but it also gives time to those people who come in and submit their papers physically, because then we can pay a lot more attention. The rest of the people who can process their estates through this system can then do that and increase our capacity to focus on real problematic areas. Most of of our offices in the master's environment are already running on the system, but Nelspruit is our pilot environment, and has turned out quite significantly. We are receiving a lot of information via our webpage of people who are looking at our website to see a number of services that we are we are offering. I must give you an indication that at least 75,000 times people have entered our webpage to see what services we render as a department. And we think that that's a good interaction with the services that we are rendering as a department. Moving to state legal services, I have already indicated that we are struggling with the state attorneys right now, but I must indicate that in terms of the brief that we have said we are going to give, we targeted in 2013-2014 that 75% of the briefs will be given to the PDIs, and we were able to meet the target. We hope the Auditor General will agree that we did. We are going to increase our target just by 1% going forward. But what we need to do behind ACE there is we want to ensure that the people that are briefed are not people that always benefit from our briefs, because that is what we picked up, that we are briefing similar people most of the time. And that is an area, before honourable members raise it, please know we are aware and we are putting systems in place to correct that. We are also wanting to improve success rates in the cases that are handled by the state attorney. You would have heard horror stories over the media, and those horror stories, some of them are true, and we are embarrassed by them, but we are correcting them, and I can assure you that. And then we want to ensure that we do a lot of work on expungement. We expand a lot of criminal records. Obviously, there are requirements that are provided for in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, and we expand as many records as we can, as long as we comply with the requirements of the Criminal Procedure Act. The Chief State Law Advisor is doing a lot of work in terms of developing opinions within the timelines that we have put for them, which is within 20 days. You will see when we report on our annual report that not all the timelines were met, and therefore, even though they performed well, because they performed slightly outside the timeline, we reported their performance as not performance in terms of the achievement of our targets. The rest of the areas that the Chief State Law Advisor is doing are already set out there. What would interest the honourable members, though, is the fact that we are doing a lot of translations, and we do the translations of the work of the Chief State Law Advisors within a period of 55 days. We've worked very hard in building a language office to translate every piece of legislation. We are now entering into a partnership with the Pan African Language Board to translate all our work as the Department of Justice to all the official languages in the country, and we are very excited about the project. Bills and subordinate legislation that we are doing, the Legal Aid Amendment Bill, the MS spoken to, the determination of remuneration of office bearers of independent constitutional institutions is also being processed. The Magistrate Court Amendment Act, as well as the Maintenance Amendment Act. You will wonder why we have not put the traditional courts bill there. The reason why we have not put it is because, one, it had lapsed in the NCOP, but two, we were guided to rework the bill in the shortest possible time and to bring it back through the normal procedures, and we intend doing just that. The drafting of bills is a very lengthy process in our environment, but we've done reasonably okay in some areas. We've dragged some work a little more than we should have in other areas, but that's because we had to allow for consultation, views, and all of those issues. And our view is that we want to take everybody into account. Obviously, there are rules that we will never have an absolute agreement until the bill has been brought to the Honourable Houses. As we conclude, we want to assure Honourable Members that our work is fully aligned to the National Development Plan, and that we intend carrying out the responsibilities that we had already indicated we would. We have tabled the annual performance plan with Parliament, and the details are set out in the annual performance plan. In addition, we want to continue delivering on the legislative mandate, in particular in implementing a plan to make safe attendance to work better, in building capacity of the department to serve our stakeholders better, and ensuring that the department has better discipline and is able to fight fraud and corruption within its ranks and to those to benefit those that we serve. Honourable Chairperson, allow me to end at this point. The only thing that we have not done is to then speak briefly about our budget, which I request our CFO to do at the guidance of the Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Let me get an indication, honourable members, if we want to engage in those two presentations or we wait for a financial to be able to cluster, because I'm thinking that there are some areas where in the presentation where they mentioned budget shortfalls in other areas. And if we engage a report now, this presentation, it will be able to make us come some to be able to move forward. So I would like to check if the members are agreeing that we proceed with the financial.
Chairperson, yeah, I need to leave at 12:30 for another meeting, so I was just wanting to ask if there are any questions specifically for me, if they could be asked now.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Let me get indication if there are few questions that will be responsible by the Deputy Minister to respond, so that we able to can respond before he leaves, and the others will be addressed by the DG and the entourage of the Minister. So please, honourable members, not all the questions to the Deputy Ministers, because the entourage are here, they'll be able to assist each other, just maybe ask political questions. They'll be able to, the Deputy Ministers be able to address them. You see the... Yes, I know the mind. My choice, the first one is Mikalakas, another Mikalakas. Is the FRMS correct?
Yes.
Okay. I note you. The other, the second speaker will be under the mind. Those are the only two speakers that I've admitted. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Deputy Minister, I hope this is not too much of an administrative question. But there is something that I heard the last week that is quite worrying, and I wonder if you could help me with this. Apparently, well, they spoke about the third-party funds earlier. Apparently, some of these accounts that were with FNB have been frozen recently. Are you aware of this, and what is the department currently doing about it? The other thing that I want to just quickly ask is, I see they put, and this is a political question, they put a lot of emphasis in the presentation on especially making the community aware of human rights and tolerance towards specifically the LGBTI community. However, during the recent UN vote, the resolution on protection of the family, South Africa deliberately voted to exclude the diverse concept of family, excluding the LGBTI families. Taking that into account, as well as the government's silence on Uganda's anti-gay laws, it's just worrying what the national policy will look like, the national policy that they refer to on LGBTI. What is the department specifically going to include in that awareness to the public? It's a direct contradiction to what the national government is doing about these rights.
Thank you, Chair. I will have to make two. One is, it might be in the detail, Honourable Deputy Minister, but it's been, having been part of the Justice Committee before, is the question of the extraditions and the treaties that we do sign. I would not get into the detail, but some of them, they always pose some kind of tension in the committee when sometimes called to to ratify and work as the department has recommended, or the minister has recommended to us to do that. Sometimes it's countries with death penalties, those kind of things. So it's been a matter that it needed some political comment, you know, in the past. So if you could make a comment there. Then the second one relates to what was raised by the DG in relation to the commissions of inquiry. Perhaps you didn't mention it in your remarks earlier, but I think it's something that I would request you. They are saying that they are challenging the budget, but these commissions of inquiry, and it's us as politicians and the public who makes these demands for these commissions of inquiry and all that, as to is there thinking in the political authority side in terms of how this should be handled, I think, before it caused havoc like what they started to do now with courts and having court cases put across in terms of people wanting funds, wanting to be covered, wanting to participate, those kind of things, those kinds of aspects that really accompanied the demands for a call for the commissions of inquiry. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thanks a lot. Maybe if I can also ask my own question to one of the committee members. No, it was just on the point I raised earlier relating to small claims courts. One of the areas that we have a problem with is Mpenze, which is honourable in Zimande constituency. And the problem is, as he would know, I mean, we just opened one at Polela, at Sanglani, at Bulwa. Small claims matters, I don't know how many of them, if any, have to go to Howick as the nearest place. Maybe now Sanglani is being set up, that might make closer, but the difficulty is finding somebody to be a commissioner there. The local magistrate doesn't want to do it, he can't be forced. And I don't have any legal aid office, so I would appeal to Honourable Nzimande to assist in specifically, just because that's your constituency, so that's why I'm not going to attack anyone else, but it's just, and then, yeah, and obviously that, I know that's your constituency, I don't know where other people's constituencies are, so when I find out, maybe I'll direct the same things to them. Look, on Honourable McLarkis's questions, I think the third-party funds in the FNB accounts, my understanding is that it's linked in with issues of security, but I think that the staff can respond to that. It's not an issue that accounts have been frozen. It was a security question with the EFTs. On the issue of the UN, the vote at the United Nations, Human Rights Council, I'm actually a bit perplexed by the whole issue because the vote was around having a debate on the family. What was passed was as far as I could see, a neutral resolution, not defining the family. There were two amendments that were then proposed. There was one that was from Saudi Arabia, that was defining the family, or defining marriage and marriages between a man and a woman. That resolution was not proceeded with. And then there was another resolution which tried to define the family more broadly. But the family, the wording in the original resolution didn't have a restrictive definition. And it was just a resolution to have a debate on the matter. That was really all. One commentator, I think, for Human Rights Watch wrote a article which was covered in our media, which then attacked the South African government. But I actually don't think it really that fair or that accurate in terms of what I've said. Because the resolution that was supported was not in contradiction as far as I can see. I don't have the reasons why we didn't. I mean, it is the Department of International Relations, why we didn't support the other amendment and would want to get a briefing on that. But I think that one is a bit of a storm in a teacup cup. Issues on Uganda, the question there is, and I think there would be a dispute in civil society as well, what is the best approach? That generally we do not comment on other NGOs can comment on non-government organizations, political parties can comment on other countries' laws. The South African government doesn't. And if we were to be openly critical of Uganda or any other country on the continent, and remember it is not just Uganda, there's a large number of countries on the continent, and if we picked out, singled out one, the question would be why that one and not the others. Would we be best placed? At the level, best placed to have an impact. So we shout at Uganda, and then what? Then what happens? Maybe some people will feel better, but would we have had an impact? Part of the Human Rights Council resolution is for a regional workshop on the issue. That's region for the Africa region, which we are looking forward to taking place. And we hope through that engagement we would do better. But as far as the policy, I mean, the policy was released at the Constitutional Court by the then Minister, Jeff Kadebe, earlier this year, in fact of time, earlier this year. So that is available. And should be distributed. The main area that's outstanding is the question of hate, speech and hate crimes, which went to Cabinet before the elections, but Cabinet's concern was that there needs to be a broader public debate, and the issue is who's best placed to do that, because there are different sides on the hate crimes issue, not so much hate crimes itself, but hate speech and the issue of freedom of speech. I was a little bit interested here on the radio this morning on the whole issue of Guy Hofmeyr seeing Dissem, that the person, I don't know if he was from Solidarity, I didn't hear where he was from, but the person sort of in support of Guy Hofmeyr was talking a lot about hate speech. Now, hate speech is not a crime in our law currently. That's what this policy would be seeking to do. But I think that there are going to be sections of our society who will have concerns relating to, including, whilst appreciating the non-partisan approach, including members of your own party, because of the issue of freedom of speech, because it's hate speech would restrict that. So just to indicate that issue, but hate crimes are important. The issue we've raised before is not on on the LGBTI issue, but if you go and damage a mosque because you don't like Muslims, at the moment it will be simply malicious injury to property, whereas it actually is a greater crime, and that's why it needs to come in. But it's the hate speech element is the complication. Honourable Nzimande, just on extradition treaties, look, we do have extradition treaties with countries that have the death penalty, but our domestic law is, as defined by the Constitutional Court, is that we cannot extradite a person to a country where they run the risk of being executed. So we do extradite, but we only extradite if they are being extradited for an offence that faces the death penalty. We only extradite if we get an undertaking that if the death penalty is passed, because the courts in those countries are free to operate, if the death penalty is passed, they will not be executed, because the countries usually have the executive are the people who actually sign the death warrant to allow the execution to be passed. So we cannot extradite to a country unless an undertaking is given. As you would know, it causes some complications with Botswana, where we used to, as far as I understand, get an undertaking that the death penalty wouldn't be passed, wouldn't be executed, implemented, whatever. The person wouldn't be executed. That undertaking is no longer given, and so it does cause problems. We can't extradite to Botswana. We are going to be looking at having... We have jurisdiction for terrorism matters, but we don't have jurisdiction for other matters that were committed outside the country. It's an issue that we need to look seriously of, shouldn't we be changing our law to have that jurisdiction so that we can try those people in our own country, because otherwise we just have to let them go. And that is a problem for our own people. On the issue of the commissions, look, the decision on the commissions is taken by the President. So it's his decision as to whether or not to have a commission. So the commission on the arms procurement, the commission on Marikana were decisions taken by the president. I think they were taken, I don't want to speak for him, but they were big national issues. Sure, they, particularly Marikana, caused complications. There was the issue of legal representation for some of the mine workers, where legal aid felt it wasn't within their mandate and would have cost a lot of money. Because remember, in a commission of inquiry, it is just a finding and a recommendation. There's no force of law in that finding. So as a result of the Marikana Commission, nobody is going to be ordered, if that is the view of the commission, they cannot order anybody to pay compensation. They cannot sentence anybody to punishment. A term of imprisonment or fine or any form of a punishment. Those processes would have to follow in those courts. So if there are going to be civil claims against anyone from Marikana, they would have to go to the civil courts. If there are going to be criminal cases, they would have to go to the criminal courts. And I think, as you would be aware, the criminal cases were put on hold to await commission. But all the department is doing is it's a conduit for funding, basically. And yes, it does cause some complications in our budget because that is not money that is budgeted for. I think the hope and the DG or the other officials can give more detail. The hope is there will be reimbursement, but sometimes we, I think, get told to sort of find the money. But it's just a conduit. So, Chair, I hope that answers those questions. I don't know if there are any further or any follow-ups. I've still got a bit of time.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Please don't invite follow-up. You are making my work very difficult because we want to manage time together. But thank you very much.
To Honourable Michalakis on the LGBTI issue. I mean, it was just some of your comments. I did respond, but I think it is. I mean, our position on rights of the LGBTI community is clear. We have, I think, one of the best legal systems. So I don't think we can be criticized as government for that. We are then, a problem was identified as far as, so in terms of when it came to same-sex marriages, adoptions, all those kinds of issues, we're well advanced, and we're more advanced than many of the other countries in the world that claim to be more progressive societies than ours are. And I don't, you know, so a problem was identified with victimization of LGBTI people as far as hate crimes, the so-called, and I emphasize the word so-called protective rapes. So it doesn't help when people don't acknowledge that, because your point was, oh, what is this policy? How can the policy, you know, what's the value of the policy if we don't shout at Uganda and do other things. And I would appreciate if there could be a more acceptance and recognition for what we've done. I just wanted to add that point, Chair. Thanks.
And thank you.
Thank you. I'll keep it short. No, my intention was not to specifically criticize the department. In fact, I was quite. The government is a different story. The department itself, I'm quite comfortable with what I can expect from the department. Don't get me wrong on that. As well as our track record, I mean, South Africa has, in terms of legislation, been way ahead of the entire world. We were one of the first countries, and I acknowledge that, who legalized same-sex marriage. However, according to you, Honourable Deputy Minister, it might be the wrong portrayal in the public, but it still creates a bit of worry that everything everywhere is not always all right in all departments. It's just worrying, and that was just a political comment I wanted to make with regards to that. With regards to what you said about us keeping quiet and what we achieve
by not speaking up about Uganda, and I mean it doesn't concern your department, it's just a comment, is personally I feel that when other countries saw what was going on in South Africa, they could have taken the exact same stance. Where will it get us if we don't speak about what is going on in South Africa? If we turn our backs on other countries also experiencing human rights violations, regardless of how small, how remote, what the issue is, then perhaps we're exactly doing the exact opposite from those who helped us get out of the mess that we were in. That's just two comments, but I have all the faith in the world in the department.
Thank you, Mr.
The Deputy Minister is correct, but I was going to ask for the wallet for the person to help me, because it's everybody there is on grants, you know. So they paid for their children to find work in the urban areas. So I'm looking for the wallet.
Chair, thanks. Just on that point, and I mean, seriously, yes, I mean, Mpendle doesn't have much of an economic base, and there would be many other communities like that across the country that would also be battling to find commissioners. So I don't know if there are any lawyers living there. And I think the issue would be, Honourable Ndumane, that you ask in the community, maybe there's somebody that's retired who would fit the requirements, a retired lawyer, a retired advocate, or somebody who lives nearby, that kind of thing. There is reimbursement for the commissioners provide their services for free, but there is reimbursement for travel. That's also something that can be looked at. But I think the point I was raising in all seriousness, as to other people, I mean, ask in your constituency whether you've got a small claims court, and if you don't, let's see what can be done, is whether, you know, people can be approached. I recently discovered that we didn't have a court in Howick, and one has now been established, but Howick is obviously a lot bigger. On the Mikolakis's point, look, I think the issue is if there are, I mean, people have different views on the matter, and as individuals, and that would apply to individuals in government. So you may have a situation of an official somewhere showing homophobia or being perceived to be homophobic. So that's why we've got the equality courts, and those issues should be taken up. And again, I challenge anyone to come up with those rather than making generalized statements. On the issue of the comparison between the situation in Uganda and the situation in South Africa prior to 1994, well, the fundamental difference is that South Africa was not a democracy. That was the whole problem. That the millions of people were deprived of vote. It was only the white population that effectively had the vote, and the kind of an Indian population sort of brought in a little bit later. But it was not a democracy. Uganda is a democracy. Whether one likes what law they're passing or not, it is a democracy. So one has to be careful of the issue of sovereignty. And I think that's quite fundamental to understand. And I don't think it is correct to make a comparison between the undemocratic South Africa practicing the crime against humanity that was apartheid with countries that are democracies, even if you don't like the policies the laws that they are passing. And that is why you need engagement. The problem is that in terms of opinion polls, is that a large number of Ugandans are in support of the laws that their parliament passed on this matter. That's why they need engagement. That's why simply shouting is not going to have any impact, because the majority seem to feel a particular way. And when I say the shouting, that is as far as governments, NGOs, don't have that same restriction. And Chair, I've been, thank you very much. I'm very sorry that Mr. Chetty didn't want to try and engage with me on the issues that he engaged in his letter to Natal Witness last Saturday, but maybe we can engage through the pages of that newspaper. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. We'll proceed, but you have released any time that you want to leave, and as we'll continue. But Honourable Members, that's one two questions. We are, you know that two or three we are plenary, and time is going to manage time. I just want to also make an appeal to the department. The presentation, I see that, can you please make an appeal to you? If we can make
a presentation within 30 minutes so that at least we have an hour to deliberate. I'm also making a request that can you go about 1:30 so that you're able to present and give 30 minutes to make a response, you know, speech. I know that some of the other members are going to display in their best. So I'm just making an appeal and then say, indulge with me and be able to say, let us proceed around 1:30 because of the presentation. Though it's difficult and it's during time of the budget, so we just want to say, please ensure that you press everything within the sentiment that I'm making people. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Honorable members, you have the presentation beforehand, so I will try to also just be short and just limit it to...
Let me just ascertain if all members do have the presentation with them. Okay, they do have them. Okay.
Maybe just to put into context, the presentation just starts with slide 4. If I must just take brief excerpts just to get a point across that we want to make, is we are fully in support of the mission statement that we found in the ENE last year in terms of government, where government's mission is and its objective is really to get the budget deficit to decline from 4% to 2.8%. And as such, we are very well aware that funds are limited and our whole management of finances is within that context. For us, that means that we are implementing cost containment measures, which some of those we have already started to implement in 2010. So this is not new for us and we are well geared to achieve more with less. Obviously, this implies that we must reprioritize, especially our compensation spend, because we are a services department. We do not deliver goods. So most of our expenditure relates to compensation, and therefore, to address all the challenges, we need to reprioritize our compensation spend, and it also means a reprioritization of spending on goods and services. Just to give you some of our performance, on cost containment between 2019 up to the past financial year, we achieved an average of 40% saving on our consultant costs and also 10% saving on travel and subsistence. This is an average amount. You'll see later in the submission on a year-to-year how it worked out for us. We achieved a lot of efficiencies in our processes, especially in the Master's Office of the Guardian Fund and also with CPE. We get a lot of questions on third-party funds, so to indicate our performance there, we tabled outstanding financial statements for 5 years in early this year. The third-party funds handle an amount of 3 billion rand a year, of which 2 billion relates to maintenance, or 67%. On average, we pay 252,000 beneficiaries, of which currently only 4,700 is in cash. In terms of the Guardian Fund, the total value of the fund is, or the assets investment we've made is 9 billion. And you can see there that we deal also with 1.13 billion rand of payments in a year. Just to give you some context, in 2008-9, that 1.13 billion rand was only 764 million rand. So you can appreciate the growth that we've experienced in that area. The President Fund, there you can also see that we have 1.1 billion in that fund. And in CARA account, CARA is the Terminal Assets Recovery account. We are having funds available for distribution of 189 million as at the 1st of March. Then just perhaps I'll just skip and just go to slide 15 on our budget. There you can see the budget and our spending for the past financial year, the past 3 years. And you will see that this year we had an underspending of 475 million, of which you will see that most relates to capital expenditure and IJS, which is the justice system, the integrated justice system.
The reason for the underspending is really within our relationship with the Department of Public Works. I know we rely obviously on them to implement for, on our behalf, and there's been quite a few delays there. We can obviously not utilize other agencies anymore, and we don't really receive the adequate technical support from them. There's also a new dispensation for leases, and our leases are renewed, which is also impacting on our spending. On the integrated justice system, it's once again our reliance on an implementing agency, and then this time it is CIPA, and it also relates to delaying publishing approved specifications, the evaluations of bids, and delaying the adjudication process. What we have done to try to salvage the situation is we have dealt with it in the normal formal processes that is available to us, which means at various levels, at project management level, at CFO level, at accounting officer level, and even at ministerial level. We've also escalated this to National Treasury and also to Cabinet. On our spending, I think that this, if you look at on the right-hand side, the column 3, you will see that the capital that shows the decline in our capital spending, that's 17%, and that's an annual on average, or an average on our annual growth. And you will see that where we are really proud is that we've achieved a 74% decline in debtors paid off the city days. And we can really, at this stage, we are comfortable to say that we are not touching SMEs or any other small business in this regard. Then you will also see that our accruals have come down to by 60%. If you look at our cost drivers, you will see our challenges. Due to the fact that we are not building or getting capital buildings, we are really struggling to deal with leases that we must continue with. There's been an increase, you can see, of 19% on annually on average. You can also see the impact of electricity and water increases at 13%, and if your normal budget is just at an inflationary increase, you can also see this is also what happens in our private life, obviously. Where you can see where we try to save is on security services, which is also a challenge at this stage, because we have new buildings that we need to provide services for, so this should actually look better. So this isn't a good thing for us, but because you can also, if you remember well, security services increase just on salaries there for the past years were about 8%. You can see our saving then on travelling and accommodation in the last few years. It's minus 3% on average. And our computer services, you can also see the increase is only 4%. The major challenges for us in terms of our operations, you will see these psychological evaluations, 20% growth on average annually, and also transcription fees. The slide 24 just shows the increase, our normal increases that we are having for the MTEF. But I think more interesting perhaps is how we utilize our budget. So I've tried to indicate this to you in percentages there. You can see that on average 11% is for administration, which is actually a good percentage. And then 31% goes to court services, 3% to the Office of the Chief Justice, and State Legal Services is 5%, the MPA 18%, and Auxiliary Services 17%. The direct charges are the remuneration of the judges and the magistrates. Slide 27 just shows the growth in budget, how we've allocated it, and you will see there the growth in allocation to our court services. And you will see that our state legal services has actually struggled. They have remained very stagnant there in yellow. Our budget distribution is always very interesting. Our compensation, including the direct charges, are at 57% of the budget. But at regional level, you will find that it is much closer to 85
90% even in some cases. But on a whole, in the department, it's at 57%. And you can see the rest there. You can also, on slide 30, you will see the impact of OED between 2012-13 and 2013-14. And you can also see that we are a service provider in terms of services. So our salaries account is increasing as we've increased our services and our service points. Then slide 33, which is indicating once again, if we look at administration, once again, most of our cost goes to accommodation. And then if you go to slide 35, maybe you spend some time on that. That is our court services and how the budget is distributed there. You will see 62.8% on lower courts, through lower courts. And although that seems to be a lot, in terms, if you look at the funding per court, it's about 8.9 million goes to a lower court, whereas a high court would cost us about 28 million per year. So you can see the differentiation there. So although they get a larger part of the pie, they don't get much more than a high court. They get far less. If you might be interested in how we support the regions, and I've tried to just on this slide indicate to you how the budget is distributed in court services in the region. And I think it's quite self-explanatory, but you are welcome to ask questions if you want to. On slide 38, you can see state legal services, how we spend the budget there. And I see that goes to the Master of the High Court, 44%. And the rest, next, it's litigation and legal services, 36%. And the rest are the smaller part. If you look at the Auxiliary Service Program 5, you will see that in that program, 48% of the budget goes to legal aid, South Africa. 10% of this goes to special SIU. And then the IJS, the Justice Modernization Project, that's 31%. Just to clarify again, the Chapter 9 institutions directly speak to Treasury to achieve their budget. We are just a conduit. And then I think we just need to perhaps speak about facility management, seeing that it might be interesting to you, is that our property management and facility management, 48% goes towards property management, 41% to capital work. And that is why that has such a large impact as well if we underspend in that area. Transfer to the Office of the Chief Justice. These are the costs excluding the salaries of the judges and the magistrates. This is the amount that we will transfer to them when the final decision is made to transfer functions. You will see there that at this stage, 2014-15 showed an allocation of 134 million. We've also, in this year already, given them an additional 15 million for court efficiency. So that is in addition to 134%, 34 million rand. Our thinning pressures relate to, as the DG has already indicated, relate to accommodation, personnel expenditure, and also funding for the commissions. Funding for the commissions are usually done via the adjustment budget, so we do not budget for that in advance. Usually this is then, they deal with this in terms of any underspending that we might expect. So for instance, they might decide that if we're not going to spend on capital works that we will allocate money towards this. But obviously for us, capital works is a major objective for us to achieve. And we would really like to find solutions to really be able to build and finish our buildings, do our maintenance and get all these things up and running. So if we might ask the committee to assist us in anything, it would be to resolve all our interdependencies on other agencies and departments. Then other spending pressures, the implementation and rollout of legislation. National Treasury and Poland has been kind of and has allocated this funds to us, but obviously if you read all the legislation in their full intention, we are and remain underfunded. But we haven't put the amount to this. If requested, we can do a calculation, or we will have calculations, we can do provide that to you. But in spirit of the economic climate currently, we remain within our budget. Security I've already spoken about, and yeah, and that is it.
Thank you very much for your cooperation. Yeah. That's my call. For that. The time of the introduction was your position in the department? Okay, thank you. Honourable members, let me note your applications and all the presentations that have been presented to us, so I'll be able to engage. I note you this one, and I'm looking at this other one. Any other hints? Okay. We can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want some clarity on that question that I asked the Minister about the F&E accounts. And then I have just two other quick questions. The building of a new court, which is vital, I just want to know what is the effect of that going to be on the backlog that there is already on vacancies? And the other thing is, to what extent has the department engaged with the Department of Public Works with regards to the courts? It's simple things, but they become really big problems in the day-to-day functioning of a court. For example, Bloemfontein High Court, where I practiced until recently, you can't motion courts on a Thursday. It's absolutely unbearable because there hasn't been aircon in any of those courts for years. Just ordinary day-to-day managing of the court is a complete problem, which I know is not always the department's fault, it falls under public works, but to what extent have you engaged? And then the last thing is, with regards to vacancies, some of the posts, I just want to clarify on this specific one, at the same court, in High Court in Bloemfontein, I know they've for a long time not advertised, for example, the position of deputy court manager. And I know there's a big problem that many people don't want to necessarily apply for the job of registrar. They've taken some time to fill those posts. It has been filled, if I'm correct now. But they tend to not go for those posts because for them to eventually get to the position of court manager, they first have to go to another province, become deputy court manager there, and then come back. They don't want to go through that effort, so they'd rather go for the position of judge's clerk or so on. That position, why hasn't it been filled, and are there similar cases around the country, please?
Thank you, Honourable McGillis. I have two or three questions. The first one is about the buzzards. You presented the issues of the buzzards with the current employees. I want to link it with what the Deputy Minister raised with regards to the challenges the department is faced with, where the magistrates don't want to stay in the rural and semi-rural areas. Has the department tried to go to those rural areas, be able to issue or recruit a prospect student to be able to be ensured that they go back there to those magistrates? Is there any such thing that is in place to be able to take forward to address the challenge? The other one is the small green courts. And that is a black because I noticed in the presentation, Northern Cape does not have a small green courts. And then in the presentation, I didn't hear that there's any future plan or near plans that is going to be addressed. The other one is the family advocates. And that's one too. I noticed in your presentations, there are advocates, family advocates, and offices that have been opened in Ireland. So nothing with regards to the plans, future plans, near future plans, maybe for this current financial and next financial year, the two, with regards to distributing to other districts. If I can be specific, the Northern Cape, there's other one that's been opening up in Cape, but the other areas that have been. That not have. I would raise that because of
we can see that the Nordic has several cases of the domestic violence and other family-related violence at this stage. Then there's contradiction between the your presentation and the finance in the CFO. What's that the commission? That's that. Your presentation, you raise issue of the shortfall of the commission's budget. But now the CFO says we address, the department addresses with the commission adjustment appropriation. Why you raise it? And because as you put it, you're raising an alarm that is in a challenge to you. You are not able to deal with it. But then can you address that contradiction between yourself and the CFO? Then with regard to OSD, this issue of OSD, you raised it as this year and also the CFO, you say the financial pressures. Yes, any submission has been made to Treasury to be able to address this OSD financial pressures at this day. And raising this is a set committee that is presented to us with regards to the USD challenges that they have been confronted. Yesterday was correctional service that they raised the issue of the OSD. Now today the Department of Justice and question of so just I just want to clarify him with regards to those if I provoked you over there, Wana.
Thank you, Interim Chairperson. I hadn't yet been mentioning this issue of OSD because we, you know, the discussion between me and you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I wanted to seek clarity in most of the input, and I welcome the input. For instance, like number 6, where there was a Magistrate Court Act of 32 of 1944. My question is into prong. Is that going to be this shift of trying to develop a unit of justice, is not going to be more powerful? That's question number 1. And it's not going to be that office overpowered in the term of taking all the powers to that particular office, and what is the implication of that in the long run? Secondly, in the act, you are going to repeal absolute this act, and if it does so, what is the implication? I want to go to issue of insolvency act of 1936. There's a tendency, maybe it has come to your understanding. There's an element of corrupt practices where a contractor can be given a job before contracting that particular specific contract. That company pronounced that insolvent. I don't know, maybe in terms of interjection in economic corporate, what is the position as the department? Because that law, it needs a repeal, but at the same time, even it's not an absolute repeal, but there must be an element of finding out nitty-gritties of that particular business person when it doesn't finish the contract and become applying for insolvency. Another clarity.
Okay, Chairperson, it's too much. I don't want to disappoint the child. Okay.
Secondly, maybe next time I will question the other questions, but I want to prioritize these. I was skeptical to understand. In slide number 28, this is cyber security bill. I want a clarity. How far is the research around our country in the level of economy and in the level of illiteracy? What is the challenge after putting this in place?
in terms of intelligentsia practices, in terms of corrupt practices within the system itself, and which country has been practicing this? Because there may be your research around this.
The person, thank you. I will ask from the human documents.
Also, then, what about the problems of my province? Oh, about the province in the Eastern Cape. I want to understand that what criteria is the department using when they are facing a claim court? If maybe you are looking at the complaints or you are looking at the population. Because in Umtara, there's the eager person that is willing to operate advocate himself, but there's no specific office to practice that. So, and secondly, okay. Thank you, Norwana. I'm not sure if you were indicating, but it's fine. There's no urgency. In the absence of the DCNC and the chief, the whole team, actually, you can, if the other instance that the response needs to want to delegate to other officials with you, then you can do this.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for questions. The team will pick up the question. I'll just direct if there are questions I think have not been answered. Thank you. Starting with the CFO.
Thank you. Relating to item B, the challenge is that obviously we, all the banks have systems in place to make EFT payments more secure. And there has also been recently a Treasury instruction actually to stop the utilization of EFT payments. And within that context, we obviously experience various challenges relating to the security of our payments, which has been an integral part of the DPA payments. From existence thereof, even when it was in cash, we were very much exposed to corruption and theft. So when we started with EFT payment, obviously you need to put in secure systems. And every time as these systems, as security becomes improved, obviously you also have people who improve their practices. So relating to this, we are in the process of changing the S&B system to some of which obviously has better advantages in terms of security aspects. And that is currently under, I almost wanted to say under construction, seeing that the next question is holding, of course. But yeah, so in the process of going through and updating all our computers and software relating to F&B at this stage. In terms of the building of courts and residencies, I think obviously where courts are being built, we are already delivering services at other places. So it doesn't really impact on the vacancy rate at this stage because as the courts are finished, we create positions. And yes, and that's all from our side.
Make sure that it's that Thank you, but let me make a follow-up. But now, why is it in your presentation with regards to funding? If we pick it up with the PPSA as a letter, which is a thorn issue, you know, why is it here? Because to us, it appears as if you seek more funding. If it's just in a true kind of a situation, why don't you say, the moving forward, the audience should let us pick it, then we should how we'll be able to say because it's in the hands of the business.
Chairperson, thank you very much. let me just start with the follow-up. The reason why we are raising it here is we are raising it not only on, strictly speaking, limiting it to funding, but we are saying it's a performance issue. Because those people, for as long as you do not have the music system, where, okay, there are three things. There is an embargo for some level 10 and some elements of level 9. Those level 10 are very senior professionals, attorneys, who should be managing the work of others now and overseeing the work of others. And we can't appoint them because of this whole issue of OECD. That is the first issue. Secondly, the cost of the OECD is a lot higher than the normal cost of staff costs in some areas, especially when we are talking about level 10. And level 9, because those are very senior. But when it comes to output, because it's defined in a particular manner, their output is not, for instance, commensurate with the output of a normal chief director or a normal director who are not specialists. So there are those issues. But then there is a funding issue. Obviously, when it was established in 2007, it was not funded. We had to absorb it in our budget. So each year that you have to appoint, you have to factor it in. I think
about in 2011, Treasury gave us a little bit of funding, but it was definitely not adequate. So it remains an issue that is underfunded on the one hand, but also impacts, if you look at the line, it impacts on the performance line, not the managerial line, and the other attendant issues associated with that. Let me then speak very quickly, Chair, to the issue of, I won't deal with Blue Content because I think it has been dealt with, the issue of the family advocate. The issue of the family advocate is that ideally we want to have family advocates everywhere in the country, but the extension of Regional Jurisdictions Act, which came into effect in 2011, on the 1st of August 2011, resulted in the shrinking capacity in the family advocate offices. And where we are also starting high courts, and we didn't have family advocate services, we are now starting to put those services there. I may not specifically speak about Northern Cape, and my colleagues who know Northern Cape a lot better than I do, they speak to that specifically, and I preferably send you a written response insofar as specifically relating to Northern Cape. But I can assure this Honourable House that we've looked at all resources in the department to say how do we improve and the numbers, especially the numbers that do the work, not the numbers at managerial level, but the numbers that do the work at court level, and that is the work, the intervention that we have been doing. And we've improved the structure, we've appointed those people. So overall, we are seeing an improvement. But have we got an absolute coverage in all our part environment? I can't sit here and say, yes, in every region we have an absolute coverage that we need, because certainly we do not have that. Let me clarify, Chair, the issue of commissions. Commissions are not budgeted for when they are appointed. And whenever we have a commission appointed, we are told to find money within your space. And that's because in terms of the Commissions Act, there was no specific at legislative drafting level identification of who was going to bear the cost of the commission. Now, when we say we are underfunded, it's because what we normally do is we look at those areas in our business that don't perform that well, and we normally chop them so that we can fund the commission at any given point in time. And sometimes, occasionally, Treasury will give us, but you can't rely on the midterm adjustments because they sometimes give us sufficient money, but they sometimes don't give us anything. And for this specific risk area being commissioned. And that's the reason why it's not a contradiction. It's that sometimes they do give us a little bit of money, like, and let me give you an example of how we funded the first commission in the recent, I think it was arms procurement and the Marikana Commission. We had a project that we were running called on constitutionalism in the judgment. Then we were partnering with the president. We had been given money about 28 million for that project. We had to cut that project to be able to fund the commissions, and that's the context of the shortfall and otherwise that I wanted to clarify. Magistrates Court Act, are we going to make the Office of the Chief Justice more powerful than it is today? No, it is already powerful with or without Magistrates Court Act, because the judiciary is independent in terms of the separation of powers. So it already has a lot more power than we do as the Department of Justice. But the point of the matter is that you have give or take about 500 judges, there are 300 and some odd, well, 294 to be specific. And you have about 2,000 magistrates, and we are going to be filling the vacancies of about 300 magistrates in addition to the 2,000. So yes, in terms of the total population of the numbers of the members of the judiciary that are going to reside under the office of the Chief Justice, the population will grow. So will the oversight responsibilities of the Chief Justice over the judiciary will also grow. But he already has those oversight responsibilities, in fact, by that virtue of him being the Chief Justice. And therefore, it doesn't take away anything away from us as the Department of Justice necessarily. But what it does is that it takes the responsibilities that we were doing before, that now that the Superior Court Act and the 17th Constitution Amendment Act have been passed, those responsibilities can now legally go over to next door, as it were, if I were to use that. Is it going to be a complete overhaul of the Magistrates Court Act of 1936, or are we going to just do this and that in terms of amendments? Yes, we are talking about a total overhaul of the Magistrates Court Act. Firstly, we are talking about developing a blueprint that will assist us to transform the magistrates so that we have a cohort of magistrates or lower court judiciary, hopefully that's what they will be called when that whole transformation process has happened, so that we have a cohort that responds to the requirements of the National Development Plan as well as the Constitution in its current formulation. So we anticipate a complete overhaul process, which will take us probably not as long a time as we did with the transformation of the judiciary, but it will take us a reasonable amount of time. Probably it will be over the totality of the MCSF period. The Insolvency Act, Chairperson, I agree fully with the Honourable Member's observations. We see this a lot, especially in our capital work in construction, where a tender is granted and people start the work, they get here, they declare themselves insolvent and they run. So it's something that part of the transformation of the insolvency industry that we were doing, in part starting with the policies that I had spoken about earlier, was to address some of those shortfalls last month. Naturally, the faster we can move with the first aspect, the faster we can get to the detail in legislative drafting, where we then start saying a practice like this and like this and like this must be dealt with in this way and that way and the other way. But at this stage, we do not have anything on the table in terms of legislative drafting. Cybercrime, how far is the research? There was a bit of research that was done, not done by us as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. It was done by the State Security Agency. Now, this research, and obviously anecdotal information tells you, we were talking about the PPF and FNB right now, that's cyber insecurity if you think about it, because that's why people will hack into your account and do the things that they are doing. So it is based on that research that a policy was developed, and now we must develop legislation that must address the environment of cyber security. So it's something that is work in progress, but if you need better detail around intelligentsia and the like, that detail will come from the Department of State Security. We can do one or two things. The Honourable Member can write directly to them, or we can ask them because we are in the same cluster, so that they can provide us information and then we can provide a written response. Criteria for the small claims court, Advocate Durant will speak to that. And Honourable Chair, I think except for the small claims court, all the questions have been answered. But let me just quickly clarify the thing about suburbs and rural areas. Because I think because of time we kind of glossed over the answer. Our priority in the past 5 years, well, in the past 4 years to be specific, has been pay particular attention to rural communities. Because when we're talking about access to justice, people in urban areas perhaps have a slightly better advantage because of proximity to the court and everything else. Those that are in rural areas, they suffer for educational issues, they suffer for other issues, and so their vulnerabilities are not greater than the vulnerabilities of people that live in the peripheral area. So as a result, we even when it comes to advertising for business, normally we would advertise the newspapers. There are some places in South Africa still that don't even get the newspapers, at least not as regularly as they should. And though in those areas, that is where we rely on our footprint, which is what Dr. De Vere was saying. For people to go either through Izibizo or through other type of community engagement to, amongst others, tell them what they would have wanted from us, but amongst others, also tell them the opportunities that we have in the Department of Justice, both in the department and in court, and therefore tell them about opportunities around bursaries and internships and the like. So the internships that we've had in the recent past were rural focused. Internships and learnerships. We also done with that specific focus. Similarly, the services that we offer, Honourable Chair, are very rural focus. So you'll see the small claim court, we try to do them as far as possible in those areas. You'll see the special offenses court is focused on those areas and in fairly urban areas where you see a lot of criminality against vulnerable people. Those are just the few things I wanted to clarify, Chair. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we just want to check the follow-up. We this is very progressive. And thank you for the cooperation. I don't have any indication that for any follow-up. Just be brief because I requested that, remember we were supposed to attend at 1 and then we've gone about. And please be brief so that I can be able to.
I'm going to this traditional piece. The issue of this traditional thing, I want to understand is going to be started from the truck. Because the complication when we were in the city of the Eastern Cape was too much of professionalism where in the rural area I myself and Roy. But in the process of traditional issues, the behavior is different than when I'm in court. But I wanted to say that the department managed to consult the rural people on the ground before it was being taken to SOPN. It's out yet.
Thank you for your response.
Thank you, Chair. The Fossil Court Bill has a long history. It was first introduced in 2008 in the National Assembly, and then it was not finished last when the act ended. It was introduced in the NCOP. It last when the last passed and ended. But during the two processes, there's been a lot of experiences and lessons gathered, which we believe are going to help revise the bill and put it in a manner that addresses all those issues. And one of those issues is the issue of consultation. What has happened is that prior to the passing of the bill, there was a consultation that was undertaken by the Law Reform Commission, and they produced a draft bill on those consultations. But the Law Commission left out other aspects of policy which they left to government to deal with. And I think government consulted only in respect of those aspects which were not dealt with initially by the Law Commission. And it emerged during the hearings and submissions and a lot of comments which were written about it. There was also a need to consult broadly around all other aspects in the law. Now the first that the team has been outlined that the bill will be redrafted and be introduced entails as we start from scratch and then also consultation. But there have been desire from the minister that so that we avoid what happened over the past two administrations, we make sure that bill gets introduced and finalized in this term of administration. Otherwise, we'll be going too well. But the advantage, the bigger challenge is that whilst the bill is delayed, the act that the courts continue to use as the traditional court is the act drafted in 1927, which still recognizes segregation, which still talks language which is not compatible with the Constitution, which still premised on the values of a different society. So, despite the fact that the administration should deal with it urgently, I think it's undesirable in 2014 to allow traditional leaders chiefs to implement an act that was passed in 1927 today in this age, whatever. So the complaints challenge about the conduct, whatever, the challenge that we do not have a legislative framework to address those challenges. And the more we delay with the bill, the more everybody in Parliament cannot resolve challenges that happen every day at a cost because they are using outdated act for the people. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. And that, remember, that is work in progress. I think they just say that there are lessons left because done for a second time.
hope this time around there will be no repose with regard to the process moving forward. With that, I would like to thank the department, DG, and your team for the efforts that your presentation was really a work in progress. With that, there are some challenges, but there are also plans that will be the way to address them. I'd like to make a comment and observation and congratulate the department as they have addressed the issue of gender transformation. Maybe congratulate the department because it's really impressive. This is what we are happening with other departments where we see that this department is explaining that they understand the language of the government when we are talking about the gender transformation. With regards to the congratulations with them, thank you very much for. And also for your cooperation. We are at least trying to finalize our business quickly before we leave. Thank members, thank you very much. According to the agenda of 1.5, I hope that because yesterday the members managed to go home with the meetings, and then I've been that made me aware that they've made an amendment that was raised yesterday on page 2 with regards to Honorable Dwemba. So with that, can we just be able to I'm presenting the minutes and can you exercise that? Thank you. Honorable McElgillis.
Thank you. Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Okay. I move the settlement of the minutes. Okay. Thank you. I see. The committee program, as well as the committee program, we had it yesterday. And let me give over to the secretary. We just want one or two that want to highlight in the program.
Looking forward, we've got Tuesday, the 2nd of July, Department of Police and Ida will be presenting. It's again after the sitting of the House. We will take on board the transport problems we had last night and take that forward and try and rectify those. And then the 23rd, we're adopting the reports on these departments, and they really will just be a broad summary of the issues, and then the comments all for the NCOP. And then the Magistrate Commission introduction. There are reports that they've given to the Department of Justice. We're waiting for those to be tabled so that we can schedule them for members to review, but some of them haven't been tabled yet by the ministry, and that refers to magistrates that will be suspended or under investigation, and that will really be the end until the 30th when you have a briefing by the Department of Defense and Military Veterans.
Honourable Mali.
No, it's quite, it's not ordinary that the committee sits in the afternoon, Chair. We'll looking at the program, I'm not too sure whether the secretary can explain the sitting of the committee after 5. It's preferred somewhere, but for our part, it's like groups after. So it's really on constraints in terms of slots and schedules that we have to consider the afternoons. It's not a free time. If the business can be hit on Wednesday, which is our traditional slot, let it be so, chef. But if it's not, then let it be taken that way. But it's always advisable to stick to the slots given. Also to give breather room to the members. We don't want to burn them out. There's still a huge program, massive program, that we have to develop with them and follow. So I don't know, perhaps the secretary would explain that. Because I don't see any pressure why we can't receive this thing on the normal slot on 2030.
Chairman, I'm guided by committee. The reinforced scheduling the Department of Police on the Tuesday was not so much utilized Friday time slot that's available. But I'm guided by the committee.
Honourable Wana, no, I want to say what happened is that we were aware that we are going to have that, because on Friday we said we not need to have a meeting, but we made me this that I want to appeal to Honourable Zumanle that, you know, at some stage we are here to work, we are flexible to do that. But the only thing that must be accommodated is when we want to go. That's the only thing that I want to stress in this collective, that when we want to go to our places, because we want to prepare our speeches, the transport must be on our toes and we go, not to be surprised by NPA just because it's doing their program. We were not complaining about sitting office, I think, because that was a pre-arrangement that we all agreed upon.
Thank you, Honourable Mathias. I just want to raise on one, what Honourable Mathias raises is the issue of the stand groups. As the secretary said with the NAs, also, we only have one stand group. So it will be a challenge and disadvantaging also the members if they're saying that we are going to sit here and then Adam is a it's a clash of the program of the study group. If then if another day then you can slot also another time to be able to slot on that one, that will be it. But we can do that in the ideal situation. And this comes to that one of the even I don't want to go there again because of what you expected today. The Honourable Mohabi said even he will not even allow in his committee to schedule the meeting in after part because of what you experienced yesterday. But let's not lament on that one. Okay. Can you respond to
it? Yes, Chairman. We proactively through the chairperson the programs have to be submitted to the House Chair, and all those factors are taken into account, particularly the fact that the debates are scheduled for the 29th of July. They request that we prioritize briefings by departments. If we were not able to do that, then the report that we're adopting on the 23rd would be in question. We could then move that to Friday as a solution.
I'd like to make an appeal to the committee and
let you
consider that one. Before the Monday, just want to say that what explanation has been provided to us that is how is the change.
Thank you, Honourable Action Chair. With taking into account what the secretary said, I move that we accept the program as it is. Thank you.
Honourable
Even Friday is not the slot for this committee. The slot for the committee is Wednesday. And we must do things structurally. So the point I'm making really is that we require members for other participation in other things in the buildings and access to study group. Friday is for joint committees. We will be calling for joint committees on Friday. So even why I'm raising this in the committee chair, so that when they don't start coming with proposals that are out of line in terms of the structured slots that we're supposed to have. If this one is accepted, Jay, it should be the last one. That's the message I'm trying to put across.
Thank you, Honourable
Chair. Thank you, Chair. I second the proposal by Honourable Mihalakis. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support what Honourable, I can't pronounce the same name, can I use the name George? What he is saying to say, yes, yesterday we did experience problems, but that those problems were identified and the secretariat with relevant structures will deal with it. Some of us, I can understand what Honorable, I was about to say Komisa Nzimande. Honorable Nzimande is saying, but for us, as a committee, we are available and we are ready to work after hours, up until the pressure that we are in is resolved and we will move on. As to the changing of the program, this matter will be brought forward to the programs committee if there's a need for change. But for now, let's leave it as it is and see whether tonight we'll experience. I don't want to be home at 11:30 tonight. I want to be home immediately after we have dealt with the program as it is. Thank you, Chair.
I'm saying that the following year. That's what we have just voted. There's no any meeting after. With that note, Honorable, this is noted, and also I think also let us not. We need to also note what Honorable Zimbabwe has raised moving forward in the same. With that note, thank you very much, meeting that chair. You have been a great team.
Thank you.
And you have made my work easy. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, for sharing very well.